There is a small town in southern Austria, half perched on the mountains that slope partly into German Bavaria, which once a year becomes the mecca of music lovers. For 2 months in the summer, this otherwise silent and sleepy and romantic place, rich in handsome old palaces and majestic churches, has a wonderful flowering of life and of incomparable music. The streets seem to grow wider to let beautiful motor cars drive by. The hotels titivate all they can to please their cosmopolitan and exacting guests. The shops replenish their windows and their shelves, and the theaters awaken from a long slumber to the sound of perfect symphonies, perfect opera, and perfect dramatic performances. As you doubtless have guessed, this place is Salzburg, which a great majority of music-loving Americans visit regularly each year. Practically everybody who has even a small claim to a place in the international world of music make it their summer pilgrimage. And thousands of others who, like myself, have no claim to music, either than their need of it and love of it, form the admiring audience. The artists find it easy to mingle with their public in Salzburg, for the town is small and life very informal. But some of them prefer the seclusion of a villa on the hillside, which they rent for the season. And to the seclusion group belongs Toscanini, who takes a house on a slope far from the town, and Madame Lotte Lehmann, who generally lives in another on the opposite side of the valley. The whole of Salzburg lies between them. But at this moment, Toscanini and Madame Lehmann are under the same roof, the roof of Radio City. The maestro is rehearsing NBC's Great Symphony Orchestra, and Madame Lehmann is in the studio with me and is allowing me to interview her. Didn't I say when I began this series of programs that the mere thought of some of the outstanding people with whom I would be talking things over awed me not a little? Well, when I had a fleeting encounter with Madame Lehmann in Salzburg, just after I had been ravished by her performance of Beethoven's Fidelio, little did I imagine I would be able to ask her some of the questions which I forced back from my lips then. Today, however, the Lotte Lehmann who is before the microphone must be considered not only as the great singer that she is, but also as a writer, because this year she has published a book called Eternal Flight. It is the story of two dancers. It sounds so human and so real that you must let me be indiscreet, Madame Lehmann. How much of your book is autobiographical?
Oh, nothing at all, dear Miss Sergio. I am asked that always, but my whole novel is just fiction. Years ago, I published a book with poems in Vienna, but never I had enough courage to start a long story as a novel. When I began this book, I never thought it might develop into a 50,000-word book. I thought to write a movie synopsis. But then my story ran away with me. And one day I saw that it must be a novel, not anymore a synopsis. Now I changed the beginning, and I can assure you it was such a joy for me to be carried away from my inspiration, using each free minute to continue my story. I wrote very quickly, and seldom I changed anything. Almost my hands could not follow my thoughts. And one thing was very strange. I didn't know exactly the outcome of the different characters. And forming my own thoughts, I was at the same time curious about the end of the story. I don't know if that is the exact way to write a book, perhaps not. But for me, it was such a wonderful experience, and I had a happy time.
May I be allowed another indiscretion? Is it true that you're writing a second book? If you are, won't you be very generous and tell us a little about it today?
Since Eternal Flight has been published in German, that was in Vienna, Christmas, a year ago, I wrote and published a second book in Vienna in the German language. It is the story of my own life, and it has had already the second edition after a life of 3 months. It will come out in English translation in London in February, and I hope to see it very soon also in America. I had chosen the title Beginning and Arise, but my London publisher Routledge was not satisfied. So I think I call it Thus Far. This title may be the right one because it shows that my career is not finished yet. On the contrary, I never lose the ambition to accomplish my art. and I hope years later to write a second part of my memoirs. The second book is not the only which I wrote after my novel Eternal Flight. I was in Australia last summer and wrote a diary, and now I will bring it out as a book with many snapshots which I took on my exciting and marvelous world trip. The book has the title Singing Neath the Southern Cross. Nice, isn't it?
Romantic indeed. I hope to be one of your first readers. Madame Lehmann, I've been told that you began to write when you were in your teens, and that now writing is a form of relaxation for you. Do you, as an artist, feel that this particular expression of art could eventually absorb you as deeply as your music and your singing? Could you devote yourself equally to both?
Oh, I think it is a part of my being to do everything with much intensity. Everything which I should begin without enthusiasm would be a failure. Writing is so very much a joy for me that I could devote myself to it in the same absorbing way as in my singing. Isn't that wonderful, to be at home in two different worlds of art?
Yes, and I envy you. But a question arose in my mind as you spoke. The artist who performs before the public can see its reaction immediately, a fact which I imagine is extremely important to the true artist, always striving for improvement and perfection. But the writer only has the reaction of reviewers and gauges the public's appreciation eventually from sales returns. As a writer, Madame Lehmann, do you miss the immediate reaction of your public? Although I presume your book drew much fan mail from those who love you in your great singing roles.
Oh, certainly. The artist needs generally the response of the public. I confess that I sing much better if I have the feeling that my public understands my art and shows that they like it. It is always give and take, you see. But don't you know that there is a great happiness in singing quite alone, just for yourself? Those hours are for me blessed ones, when I lose myself in the endless beauty of lieder singing, and I don't ask for the public then. The same satisfaction I find in writing, and in some way even more, because it is a creative work and a lasting joy. Born in a mood of inspiration, my thoughts are caught in a book, like in a frame, and I can look at it and hold it in my hands and read it again and again, and always it will be a new revelation for me. But please don't think that I am so arrogant to find it so wonderful. Oh, no, but it is something of my own, a child of my brain, as you call it. And each mother loves her child, even if it may be a naughty child.
A naughty child? A brilliant child, deserving a lovely Santa Claus. By the way, millions of people have seen Madame Lehmann on the stage. Thousands, I suppose, have met her off the stage. But I'm sure I'm one of the privileged few who have seen her trim a Christmas tree, the result of her work on a great big tree in her New York apartment 2 days before Christmas. Certainly was worthy of her art. It was a magnificent tree. Madame Lehmann's husband was arriving the following day from Europe, and the lady I interviewed, among a heap of holly and electric bulbs, glittering decorations, boxes of snow, and miles of silver ribbon, was just a smiling, happy wife. Have you any plans about hiding Easter eggs in your apartment if Easter finds you still with us?
Oh, I would love it. I always wanted to stay here in America once for summertime, to rent one of the lovely houses, for instance in Connecticut, where I have very beloved friends. But there is every year something that forces me to go back to Europe. Not that I don't like to do that. You will understand, Austria is my home. I have a lovely country house near Vienna in the Viennese forests, and concerts and performances are waiting for me more than I can do. And there are the Salzburg festivals. Now, for instance, this year I had decided not to go to Salzburg. I work almost the whole year, and I wanted to take long holidays, and therefore to cancel Salzburg. Then I heard that Maestro Toscanini does Tannhäuser. Never in my life I changed my mind quicker than in that moment. How could I resist to sing Elizabeth under his baton? I can hardly wait for this new experience and am looking forward to it with impatience. And then I have another reason to go home for the summer. I have a new part, if I may say so. The part of a very proud stepmother of four marvelous grown-up children. Last year, they came all at once into my life. Three boys from 18 to 23, very handsome boys, and a beautiful girl. She is here now in New York. She came with my husband as a lovely Christmas present and enjoys her first New York visit with much excitement. We will stay here until the middle of April because I have to fulfill a lot of concert engagements all over the country and, of course, some performances at the Metropolitan.
And how are you going to finish the year, Madame Lehmann?
Oh, in the nicest way I could do, because I shall sing my favorite part, The Princess, in a performance of Rosenkavalier at the Metropolitan Opera. And after the performance, my family and I will celebrate a real Austrian New Year's party at my home. We call that Silvesterabend. Now I take this occasion to wish everybody who is listening to me a very happy 1938.
Thank you, Madame Lehmann, and all good wishes to you for a very happy 1938, from January the 1st to December the 31st, and for many, many 12 months after that.
Thank you, Miss Sergio.